Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Life Rewired podcast. And thank you guys for joining us on this Monday, April 10th. Chris and I actually just traveled this past weekend to Denver, Colorado. We did just a little kind of getaway, fun trip, out to the mountains. We got to explore a little bit more than the first time around. We actually headed up to Boulder, Colorado. I had no idea that it was like only 20 to 24 minutes away. So it was really cool kind of getting a little bit up close and personal to the mountains and you know, just exploring the area and seeing Boulder. We definitely love Colorado. It's definitely a fun place to visit for us. We're both obsessed with the mountains, and so it was just a nice getaway. But today's episode is going to be a Q&A style episode. We pulled, you know, some questions from you guys, so we appreciate you guys, you know, taking part in the Q&A, asking these awesome questions, and we really can't wait, you know, to dive in during this episode. But before we begin, this episode is brought to you by Nash Nutrition. The Nash Bar is made with simple and nourishing ingredients, 20 grams of protein, and is naturally sweetened with honey and dates. And what a lot of people don't realize is that most of the so-called healthy protein bars that you find on the market are basically just glorified candy bars, essentially. You know, Chris and I were actually just in the store yesterday and, kind of just to do it, I decided to pick up, a type of food and just check the labeling and see, you know, just curious, like what the ingredients looked like. And it was like a cereal or something. And it's just crazy to see, you know, how much these food companies and food brands get away with like incorrect labeling or just manipulative labeling. You know, some even products are like, you know, healthy on the front, but then you look at the ingredients and there's literally nothing nutritious at all of any value inside of the food product. So like we tell you guys every single week, just always check those ingredient labels. And we know, through Nash that we never even have to worry or think twice about the ingredients when we're eating these bars. And so the Nash bars will be restocked mid-April. So make sure you guys head to the website after today's episode and make sure you're getting those updates through the Nash newsletter so that you can know and be notified when the bars become released. So on to today's episode, which is, like I said, episode number 80. And our first question that we're going to be starting with is how did you grow your one-on-one coaching to a full-time job? Or when did you realize it would be full-time? And so it's kind of funny, as I was thinking about this, just a minute ago, reading this question, something that I realized, you know, from the very beginning, guys, is, you know, I always knew I wanted this to be my full-time job. And I think that that's one of the most important things that, you know, you have to realize if you are looking to become a fitness professional or do this full time. You know, a lot of people go into this, you know, as a side hustle or like a side project. And, you know, something that Chris and I both have realized over these last several years is that, you know, to run this thing like a true professional business, it takes work, it takes effort, it takes systems, it takes learning business and how to scale and how to acquire customers, how to, you know, message and market to the right individuals you're trying to serve, how to, you know, niche down and get specific with your offerings. So there's so many different layers to this thing. And, you know, I guess from the very beginning, I always knew I wanted to do this full time. You know, I really did dive into this with the motivation of making this a full time job. And I really just went all in on it and just pretty much, you know, went into it with like kill mentality. You know, I kind of just was like, you know, okay, I know I have to start somewhere. So I started with, you know, the resources and the things I did have. And then I just went from there. And I think a lot of times what happens, unfortunately, especially for anybody starting a business in general, we tend to want it to be just perfect right off the bat. We tend to want things to, you know, we want to be Amazon overnight. And it just doesn't work like that. We have to go through those stages, you know, where we are, you know, selling books out of the garage. You know, we have to go through that grunt work and those grunt stages. And quite honestly, a lot of people aren't willing to do that. Like we talked about this before, like, you know, we did a whole episode, wasn't it like, don't be afraid to suck? What was the title?
Something like that.
Yeah, it was like, don't be afraid to suck, basically. And it's like, really anytime, or be willing to suck, like you guys really do, you know, have to be open to like, I am not going to be that good, but I know I can get better. And if I just trust in the vision, which the vision for me was, you know, to make this a full-time job. So it was pretty much just like complete focus on what needs to happen to make this my full-time job. And it literally is crazy looking back, you know, with us sitting here today, you know, looking back where I started with literally one client. You know, I remember when Chris was kind of, you know, showing me some ropes with her, you know, business practices and methods and systems that she was using. Like it literally started with one client, no fancy marketing, you know, no niche, no direction really. And I just went from there. And I think that, you know, if you have that mentality, you know, from the jump, I just know that you'll be able to get to this, the point to where this could be a full-time job for you. And, you know, it's going to take work. It's going to take sacrifice. It's going to take, you know, really messing up. But you can get to that point. And so, you know, kind of to dive into more specifics on this and give a little bit more tangible information about how I made this jump is, you know, early on, I was actually kind of balancing, you know, both getting paid at a gym while also building my clientele. And you know, I just did the smart thing of, you know, staying on salary at the other gym while I was building my one-on-one personal training. And once I got to the point where, you know, my one-on-one in-person training, you know, was getting to be greater than that salary, I was able to quit that job and then keep scaling with my in-person business. And then, as you guys know, as I talked about recently, I've scaled more online now. But that's really kind of how I made it happen and turned it and transitioned it into a full-time job.
Yeah, and my process was very similar. I worked mine wasn't like an athletic performance job or like anything in the fitness space, but I was working at a restaurant as I built my one-on-one coaching business. This was back in Cleveland. I've talked about it before on like my business fitness journey, and I was working at a serving job basically all throughout my master's in exercise science at Kent. And then when I started my serving job, I was doing that part-time and telling myself like once I reach this certain income basically. And back then I was like, I just want to make enough to survive. I would do this for like nothing. I just need to pay my rent basically. And I lived in downtown Cleveland. So obviously that was like more rent than I had like in Kent State or where I'm from. So I told myself like once I make my rent in coaching and like make enough to like pay my bills, whatever, that I will go off on my own. And how I grew that portion of my business of just in person, like I wasn't even doing online at this time, I invested in a business coach. And you're thinking, you know, it's probably confusing because I'm like, I need to make my rent, but I invested in a business coach. And to be honest, I put it on a credit card. And I don't recommend doing that, but that's the only reason I grew my one-on-one business enough to pay my rent and to leave my serving job was investing before I was ready. And not that I recommend, like, it wasn't like I was going into a big amount of debt. It was just like, I knew I needed this to scale to that level of being fully online. And it really did motivate me. I was like, I have to make enough to get my ROI on this business investment. That really lit a fire under me to get to that next level. Then I was able to scale online and in person at the same time and make like pretty much double what I was making serving, which wasn't like a whole lot. But then that's when I had the, you know, courage to go off and completely be on my own versus serving and doing that. Because once I let go of that part-time job of serving and went fully online and in person, that's when I had more energy and time to dedicate towards my business. And it's kind of a funny story how I got to that point. Like I said, like it just took like one sign. I was looking for a sign. I knew that income was there and I just like was kind of scared to take the leap. I had my business coach telling me I could completely do it online, but it just took one person saying like, if you quit the serving job, your online business would thrive because you'll have more time and energy. And I wish I could go back and like thank that person because it was true. So investing in my first business coach and just like taking that leap with confidence that with that extra time and energy, I would be able to scale. And looking back 5 years later, fully online. And so I think I realized I wanted to be full-time. Like when I was in my first job post-college, I had my master's degree. I was working like a job that gave me the probably the most minimum salary you could offer to someone with their master's degree. And I jumped at it. I'm like, oh my gosh, a full 9-to-5. This is what I wanted. But it wasn't even a career that I wanted. It was like just the first job that was offered to me. And I thought like after college, that's what I had to do. Versus serving and like kind of skipping that step and then becoming an entrepreneur. I didn't have an entrepreneurial like mindset at this time, but it was throughout that job. I was working with like a lot of fitness coaches and like social media, like influencers in the fitness space. And I saw they were doing it. I was following a ton of fitness coaches and I was in the fitness space. Like I had competed, followed a ton of those people and was certified, but I just didn't think I was an entrepreneur. And I thought I had to have it all figured out before I took that leap. But honestly, like during that job, I just realized like I would much rather work for myself. And that's when I realized like I want this to be a full-time thing. I don't want to work for anyone else. But the serving job was just temporary. So if you have to work another job while you're building your online business, there's no shame in that whatsoever. Pretty much everyone I know who has built an online business had to work kind of a part-time job throughout that process. And I coach a lot of women who are teachers or who are nurses, and they wait until they match their income before taking that leap. But it takes a lot of hard work, obviously, to get to that point. It takes a lot of confidence in yourself and just belief in your vision. And I think with all of that combined, plus surpassing your income of what you're currently making at your part-time job will help you take that leap. And then with that extra time and energy you have versus working two jobs, going all in on one thing is where it starts to grow.
And, like, being professional about it. Like, I think that that's something that's really helped Chris and I, because you see a lot of trainers, like, kind of half-assing their business where it's like, hey, you know, send me a Venmo payment. There's, like, inconsistent pricing. Like, there's no real, like, client life cycle. Like, it's kind of just like, hey, like, start training with me. And
I started doing that, by the way.
Let's just see what happens. Like, and quite literally, there's no business there. So, like, you really do have to do a lot of that grunt work and that initial work to add in those systems so that when you do start to, you know, facilitate clients, because what's the irony is, like, a lot of people, especially a lot of trainers out there, like, want all these clients, but it's like, what if you did get handed, you know, 50 clients overnight? What would you do? What would you even do with that? Like, so if you don't have those systems in place, it's going to be really hard, you know, to actually have a sustainable business. So definitely focus on those things too, creating those systems, getting, you know, those, the business aspects of the brand in place so you can have longevity and actually make a career out of it and consistent income out of it.
Yeah, I would also say be willing to evolve, because like I just mentioned, like I actually did start with like Venmo payments and, you know, Excel spreadsheets. Like everyone starts somewhere, and just like Zach said, like you just have to like start with what you know, and that will evolve over time. But don't be afraid to evolve with your business and be willing to change, because I've changed so much since I started my business. But it takes like that investing in your future, and not that you have to hire a business coach and, like I said, put on a credit card or anything. Like it was a very small investment, but I just was making a serving income, so that's why I did that. But there are tons of courses and like certifications out there that like give you the confidence to grow your business, or that just like help you understand the systems that like we're talking about. Like I've hired 3 business coaches, Zach has hired a couple as well, and it's just like that's where we grew over time. But that obviously comes with time and the income that you make from coaching. So just start with what you have, be willing to evolve, and be professional for sure. Mm-hmm. And this one's about kind of training online and in person, because we've talked about how we both have trained in person and online. This next question was, will you ever go back to training in person in Columbus? Personally, I will not. I went back to training in person this past summer for about 6 months. And the gym I trained at was just like evolving. It got under new management, and both one of my clients was moving away as well. And so when you train in person, you have an overhead, like you pay rent to the gym. And personally, I think that my online clients get amazing results. I have control over what goes on outside of the gym with like nutrition and personal development and the check-ins. And I honestly feel like it's even more high touch. Of course, the in-person is like, I get so like attached to my clients in person too, and my online girls as well. I try to make my online as in-person as it can get. And Zach does the exact same, because we do things very similar. But we just try and get that emotional connection we get with our in-person clients online, and it's a lot more affordable for our clients. We don't have that overhead with gym rent, and it also allows us to travel. And personally, the reason I don't want to go back to in-person is just like the future of my business. We obviously want to have a family in the future, and I know that working online allows me to do that. So that was always my vision. Like when my business coaches would ask me like, why do you want to go all online? I would say like, someday when I have a family, I don't want to have to take like too much time off. I want to be able to like work from home and work around my kids' schedule and go to, you know, soccer games and practice and like be in control of my schedule and also be there for like my family, like for my mom. Like I live 2 hours away from home, so I always want to be able to like be there, work from her house. Like she moved this past month basically from our childhood home. Just being able to be there for her and work from her house, like, and do my work versus having to be in Columbus or in a city and just like kind of tied down. So like we like the ability to travel, to be there with our family. Like that quality time is important, but also getting our clients' results is important. And we know that we can get those same results, sometimes even better, with the online, and also have that same awesome connection that we have with our in-person clients. So personally, I will not go back to training in person. And I will never say never, but right now it's not on my radar.
Yeah, and obviously this question was a little bit more directed toward Chris, with her being more fully online now. And I've actually been making that transition too, from more predominantly in-person training now to online training, because we both kind of value the same thing. We have a very similar vision with the freedom that we do want to have in our lives, while also still, you know, serving our clients. And so similar to what Christina said, you know, through these business coaches and through honestly like both of us coaching in person, we have really figured out, you know, what is like most important, what is most necessary, and how can we structure this program to, like Christina said, be super high touch. And I even remember early on, that's why you really could never say never, because I even remember early on as a trainer, like I was like, oh, I don't know if I could ever see myself like doing the online stuff. And that's honestly a lot of it to do with like, I didn't really get it. I didn't really see the processes. I didn't really understand, you know, how that kind of delivery would look and work for the client. But like Christina said, I have honestly found that it's even more effective than the in-person training, just because you are so involved, and so involved in a way that's very honestly smooth for us and the client, where it's not like we're doing like Zoom calls every day. There's a lot of autonomy we give our clients, but then there's, you know, time and place for us to, you know, be communicating with them and talking to them throughout the week and things like that. And so it is very effective, and we both love it. We're able to, you know, reach more people as well and serve more people, which is great. You know, you only have a limited amount of hours in a given day, and you can only work with so many people, you know, in person. I would say, you know, for me personally, this is a tough question though. Like if I'll talk like finalities with this of like, you know, I've never trained in person again. I know I am moving in the direction of basically going fully online here, you know, in the next probably couple of months, you know, as we lead into summer. And so basically, you know, for me, I can see myself definitely doing some type of, you know, in-person training to some capacity, maybe even if it's like doing like an event here, event there. I know Christina and I have talked about that, just because that in-person touch is so awesome. So, you know, as far as like our main businesses, they'll probably be predominantly online, but, you know, we'll still have opportunities to do things like that.
Yeah, and I definitely think that there will be some like Life Rewired like workouts and stuff like collaboratively, just because we do love to do stuff together and we do see the impact. And a lot of you guys have asked, like, when Zach has events, they'll want to bring their girlfriends, or like for me, a lot of my clients' boyfriends, fiancés, husbands, like follow Zach. And so we think it would be really cool for everyone to be able to come together and like live a healthy lifestyle, you know, collectively. So, yeah,
that was on a perfect way to answer it. The next question, which is, what is something you learned about yourselves and each other while traveling together? I don't know. What do you,
for,
go ahead.
For me, I was just thinking about my answer to this one. For me, I learned about myself, and I've known this about myself for a while, but it's just more predominant when we're together. Like when I travel alone, I kind of get stressed with traveling. And oh, I think,
yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah. I'm just like not the best traveler. I feel like whenever I travel by myself, I'm bad luck when I'm alone. So then it makes me stressed when we just fly in general, because I've been like stranded with like my flight being canceled, and I'm all the way out in San Diego and I can't get on a standby, and I just like can't wait to get home. And it's just like that helplessness that comes with flying. This has probably happened to me like 3 or 4 times where something has gone wrong. Like they've lost my luggage, or my flight was canceled, or my first flight was so delayed I missed my connection and then I'd be stranded in another city. So just like rebuying flights and all that is just like so new to me, because I didn't travel a lot when I was younger. We would drive on vacation. So I didn't really travel until I was like in college, like flying, maybe like once or twice when I was younger. But so when stuff like that happens to me, I'm just like, okay, we gotta be here. I'm like one of those people, we gotta be at the airport so early, and like we gotta be there right when they're boarding. And Zach used to travel for work, so like in comparison, when I'm with him, when I'm by myself, I'm like, oh, this is normal, you know, like this is how people travel. But when I'm with Zach, he's just like so carefree, because he would travel for work. He's like, let's get there 30 minutes early, we don't have to be there when it's boarding. And I'm just like a ball of stress. So I learned that about myself, and I've known that about myself, but it's just a reminder when we're traveling together. And then something I learned about Zach specifically this trip was that he's just like one with the mountains. I've never seen him like just so like at home in another city other than Columbus. Like he just loves the mountains, and like in Boulder, and you heard him talk about it at the beginning of this episode, we like branched out more and went to different areas of Denver. And I was just like, you were just so happy like on this trip, just like so happy, carefree, just like love the mountains. And obviously this was like more of a fun trip than a work trip. Like we only worked probably like a couple hours on Friday. We did check-ins on Friday morning, but like turning off work is something that we don't do very often. So just being able to like relax and see you very carefree was like, I just saw that something I learned about you is like, you just love the mountains.
Yes, absolutely. No, I do. And it's funny that Christina fell on the sword there and talked about getting anxious.
I knew you were going to bring it up.
During travel, it's really honestly where my brain went first, but then I was like, I don't know. But then she said it. So we'll dive into that. But yeah, no, it's just funny because yeah, I used to travel for work a lot, and it's very, like, I don't know, it's just, it's very easy to get like anxious around traveling and flights, and like the airport is just like very hectic and go, go, go. You know, a lot of people are in that boat. But like, if you can just remain like cool, calm, and collected, it's just honestly like it's going to be fine. Like, it's going to be cool. And ironically, like, I'm normally the one, you know, stressing out and freaking out about those kind of things, but we flip spots in that scenario. Mm-hmm. So we've definitely learned a little bit about ourselves, you know, with that. And then, you know, just with kind of leaning on one another, I think is a big thing too when we travel, is like, I feel like we have good chemistry with, you know, packing things and kind of getting ahead of certain like planning and things like that. And so, you know, I think we just do a good job in that regard. We're like, we're able to really help each other out with planning and preparing for trips. And while we're even on trips, like kind of saving each other in certain circumstances with like buying, you know, this or like getting that and just being prepared, I think. And that's mm-hmm. something that we both have done, you know, for each other at multiple different times when traveling.
And something I learned about us as a couple too, I guess this kind of goes into it, is like we're so routine. So like being in a relationship with someone who's very similar to you is nice because we're such planners. We're like, okay, we have dinner at this time. Let's leave at this time. We'll be able to take some pictures ahead of time and like Uber or walk to get steps in. And it's just like, we're so in sync with like our habits and our routines and like with how much time we can travel to. Like after 3 days, we're like, oh, I can't wait to get back in a routine and be home around our dogs. And we're just like on the same wavelength with everything. So it was just nice to like see that in action when we travel. Cause we're like that when we're home too, but it's just nice to be in sync in another city. It just feels different. So next question was, do you guys have any favorite gluten-free foods? And to be honest, like if you look at my meals highlight on my Instagram, we pretty much eat gluten-free. Like maybe there was like 1% of recipes in there that are may have gluten in them. And personally, I don't have like as big of a tolerance to gluten as I do dairy. It definitely does bother me, so I try to avoid it. But basically what we eat every day is gluten-free for that reason. And Zach pretty much eats gluten-free just because we eat the same groceries. But basically my like go-to meals are gluten-free oats. We both eat protein oatmeal that's gluten-free. It's just like right next to the regular oats. You just have to be mindful of which one you grab. And then for lunch, I have the Siete wraps with my chicken. So those are gluten-free. And they have an almond flour one, a chickpea one, and a cassava flour. That's the one I got for this week. And then we'll either do like a quinoa brown rice mix, which is also gluten-free. Sweet potatoes are gluten-free. We have that in our dinner. We have a gluten-free pasta that we were eating for a really long time. So like all those recipes you'll see are all gluten-free. I also recommend like we like Birch Benders pancake, protein pancake mix, and they have a gluten-free one. There's just like one that's gluten-free. So once in a while I'll get one that's not, but it doesn't bother me as much because it's not something I eat every single day. So if you're someone who's gluten-free, just obviously like read the labels and you can find pretty much any food that you enjoy with a gluten-free version. Just be mindful of the processed foods because just because you have, there's like a chip bag that says gluten-free doesn't necessarily mean it's like healthy. So I would recommend like rice cakes are a good snack that are gluten-free and like a little bit more nutritional. Dense because you can put like fruit on top or like nut butter or something. So I would just say like those are our go-tos typically. But honestly, for a lot of my clients who go gluten-free, I send them this link. It's like a Whole Foods article that's like 25 of your favorite foods that are gluten-free basically, and I send that to them. So I'll try and find that link and like share it on my story or something.
Yeah, you nailed it, Chris. Thank you for speaking on both of our behalves on that one. But yeah, we really do honestly most of the foods that we eat. And so next question is, how do you all handle conflict? I love hearing how other couples navigate hardship. And so, you know, I think for Chris and I, we have a little bit of a unique situation. Definitely in seeing other couples and interacting with other couples, I definitely think we do have something a little bit more rare where like we are very much so on the same page with a lot of shit, which, you know, obviously makes the general ease of our or the kind of general flow of our life pretty easy. But, you know, when there is conflict, I think just communicating it and like, you know, I know for me, for example, I know I was getting stressed out with like this Airbnb situation on the trip. And it was just like, I just had to kind of communicate like why I was feeling the way I was feeling and like, you know, what was causing it and all of those things. So I think just like being self-aware and then using that to communicate, you know, hardships and conflict out with your partner. So really just communication, but really being on the same page too. Like even if you're someone who, you know, maybe you do have different interests, different lifestyles, things like that, but just like trying to be on the same page in some degree, like with those things, even if you may not like have the same interests or have, you know, the same lifestyle or same job, same career, just really trying to still be aligned so that you guys can grow together. Cause I think that that's one of the biggest things with like most couples is like what happens is like, you know, conflicts and hardships will arise. And then it causes like, you know, the two individuals to kind of deviate further away from one another versus, you know, kind of coming together, communicating about it. You know, kind of getting through the conflict, like bring, like really facing it head on versus, you know, obviously just letting it kind of fall by the wayside. But yeah, just like really being, you know, on the same page as much as we possibly can through the communication, through our actions, and then talking about it, communicating it, you know, when things don't go well.
Yeah. And I think something that's helped us too is like just being on the same wavelength, like Zach said, like we avoid a lot of conflict. So there's only been like less than a handful of times we've been together for 3 years where we've had to have like a tough conversation, but we just communicate a lot. So I think that avoids a lot of like tough conversations from like getting to a point of, you know, conflict per se. So I think something that helps me is I read the book Attached recently and it helped me understand like my attachment style. And it's like when you're in conflict, a lot of people get like anxious, which means they'll like think about when you're in a fight with somebody, do you blow them up and say like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you did this. You call them a million times, you freak out, or do you avoid them altogether? And then there's a secure, well, that's avoidant where you like step back, kind of let them cool off or just completely avoid them. And that's where like you don't even have conflict. Then there's the middle, which is secure. And Zach is very secure. And I think that when I was in therapy, my therapist was like, Zach's attachment style has rubbed off on you, so you're more of a secure attachment style where you're able to communicate now, because that's just how like Zach was brought up. It's just like you talk about things, you communicate. And for me, it was very like avoidant when there was times in conflict. Like I would just like go in my room, let things cool off, like avoid the situation. And so I think as I grew up, that's how I handle like situations. So even in like situation as silly as like getting stressed about the Airbnb, I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna shut down, not say anything, let that cool off a little bit. And not that it got like, you know, out of hand or anything, it was just like a stressful situation. But that's my attachment style, like naturally, is just like that avoidant where I'll just like let things cool off. But now I'm like leaning more into that secure attachment style, not communicate and be like, hey, this is how I naturally handle it. How can I handle it better? And we communicate that and then we move on. So just like having that conversation and just like being open to like reacting in a different way to like support your relationship, your attachment style, or, you know, just how you guys communicate. So I think that book was really eye-opening for me and like being willing to like be self-aware of how I'm reacting to a situation and communicating. So yeah, that's how we handle things. But the next question was from one of my clients who recommended all the restaurants we went to in Denver. And she was asking, so when are you guys moving to Denver? And I will say, like, we absolutely love Denver. And one of the questions, which we can kind of touch on now, is, like, where would we want to move if we can move anywhere? And what was our dream travel spot? And I think if we could move anywhere, it would be Denver. Like, we absolutely loved it. And we could really see ourselves living there. But once we came home, we just felt this, like, sense of home. Like, we're so close to our family here and we just like feel like Columbus is home. It's where we met. Yeah, it's just like a vibe of like coming home. And when we were in Denver, we're like, oh, this feels like we could see ourselves here. Like, it has a similar vibe, and obviously the mountains don't hurt whatsoever, but I think that Columbus will be our home base. But traveling to places like Denver and Arizona and like, you know, around the West, like, we love being out there, but we also love being in Columbus and being home. So yeah, I think that's like where we would move, but we're staying in Seabus, and our dream travel spot for me is Italy, like Amalfi Coast. So that's where we wanted to do our honeymoon, but we're actually shifting it to Cancun, just for easier travel time and just like the season that we're having our honeymoon too. We've never been on a beach vacation, believe it or not. After 3 years of being together, we travel out west quite a bit, and we love doing that. We'll go to like Chicago, New York City, like places like that. But this will probably be like our first beach vacation, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Christina kind of nailed it all on the head. I was talking about this with some of my in-person clients today, just about like if we would ever move there or where we would ideally want to move, and she really did nail it on the head. Like, Columbus has just become such a really like home for me. Like, I just know that like through my Ohio State football experience, like, it really made like this whole area just feel like home. And then like meeting, you know, my future wife, also, you know, meeting my dog, you know, Bane, that I love so much. Like, there's just been so many monumental things that have happened for me in Columbus. And it's honestly just such an underrated city. Like, obviously it's in the Midwest, and so like you don't have, you know, major like ocean or like mountains or things like that, but it is such just like a very vibrant city. It's blowing up, it's exploding. So you kind of get that, like, you know, big city feel, but without all the BS, I like to kind of say. And so like, we really do love it here. And it's just like such a great place to, you know, raise a family and whatnot. And so we definitely do see like long-term us staying here, but definitely potentially having like some type of vacation home in Arizona and Denver, or Denver, probably Denver, because yeah, we love it there. So yeah, we'll kind of see, you know, where life takes us.
Yeah. The next question is, how do you guys handle grocery shopping, since I'm sure Zach eats much more? And that is a fact. He eats pretty much like almost like double what I eat, I would say.
Maybe even triple.
Yeah. So basically,
well, no, not double, because you're eating like 2,000 calories now.
Yeah, and you're eating like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm eating about like 3,100.
Yeah, so we're kind of close. But basically, our dinners will be like his and hers. Like, mine looks like a kid plate compared to his, just because the serving size is naturally so much bigger. So honestly, we just like create a menu for the week, and I'd recommend like for your significant other, you guys like pick meals that you both enjoy. I think like cooking two separate meals, number one, I think it takes away from quality time, because like we actually like love cooking our dinner together. We'll turn off like work at like 5 p.m. No phones, like, we'll just cook dinner together.
Throw my phone onto the couch.
Yeah, and we just like turn it off. And it's nice to spend that quality time like cooking together, like, and doing stuff with your hands. It like decreases your stress levels, and then you like,
it's
just
very
talk.
Therapeutic.
Yeah, we just talk, we cook dinner, and then we like enjoy that time together. But if we're eating separate dinners, I think that would take away from that quality time. So I'd recommend like creating a menu you guys look forward to, like maybe just you eat the same dinner. And then what we do for lunch is like we'll eat the same protein source, and then his carb source will be different. And we'll kind of, I'll let him explain like our meals for this week. But we basically just create a menu. We have the same grocery list for like a month.
You just change quantities. It's so easy. Like if you guys can get in that rhythm where like you and your significant other are just on the same page, you do the same, you know, time you grocery shop every week, same day, same time. Obviously, depending on like if you're traveling or you're out of town or like work shit comes up, like obviously all of that like can change, but at least like some type of routine around like a specific day of the week, you guys are getting your groceries. And if you can, you know, really try to plan, and like Christina said, it might take like a week to like discover those menu items, but I think it literally solves like every fucking problem. Like people waste their food, people spend too much money at the grocery store, people go to the grocery store with no plan. Like that is how 99.9% of people operate, and it's why many people are unsuccessful, you know, in their fitness journey. And so, you know, for us, we have found an incredible benefit in having these go-to menu items or these go-to meals that we know we can make and eat. And it really seriously has saved us so much money at the grocery store. It has saved us so much time because we now know each and every day what we're making, how much of it we need. So it optimizes literally every single area. And it's just like such a life hack. Like we've talked about this a million times on this podcast, but like I am telling you guys, if you can get in that rhythm, like it will literally help you in your fitness journey. It will help you financially. You'll be less wasteful. I literally cannot harp on that enough.
I think it's episode 78 that we do like cut through the BS and simplify your nutrition. And we include a recipe pack for our go-to meals. And that was actually like our go-to meals for like months and months and months. And we just change it up. So like how we navigate it, like when we do switch over our menu. So if you guys are creating like a completely new menu, we were just like, hey, what protein sources do you want? Like we have a different breakfast, but for lunch we'll have chicken. And I have those Siete wraps, like I'll make tacos, but he has quinoa and brown rice mix. So those are just like two different carb sources that were like relatively cheap. We just like get different carb sources, but we have the same like protein and veggies. And then for dinner, we're having salmon. So he eats quite a bit. And actually this is a new technique we like incorporated this week. We would just buy like huge slabs of salmon. And then we would just like make it throughout the weekend. Sometimes we'd have the perfect amount. Sometimes we wouldn't. And then we were like, okay, let's calculate how much we eat per night. Like I eat 6 ounces. He eats what, 14?
Yeah.
So obviously almost over double what I'm having at that meal, but we eat the same sides. And like, our sides are pretty much the same because it's mostly vegetables and like complex carbs. We each eat like a sweet potato. We each eat a certain amount of asparagus. I'm just realizing we forgot to get. But anyways, we calculated like, okay, if I eat 6 ounces, you eat 14. Let's order X amount and just get that times 4 or 5 for the week. So that's how we ordered our salmon this week. So now it's packaged per night and we make it fresh. So we decided like we like it better fresh.
It's so much better fresh. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Night and day.
We just calculated like how much protein do we need for that dinner? What sides do we want for like a carb and a veggie? And then we just keep that consistent for like a month and then just make sure, yeah, you account for like them eating double plus what you're eating. And it's kind of like a little his and hers meal, but same exact meal, different portion sizes. And then he gets extra calories from Nash bar snacks, protein bars and stuff like that. And I just really stick to my 3 meals and like fruits and veggies. So that's kind of how we navigate eating and grocery shopping.
Yeah. And volume foods for the win. I mean, we just switched around some of our like protein sources. It is like absolutely insane, guys. Like how much just like different protein sources can make such a massive difference. Like I went from eating like 2 meals a day to eating like 4 meals a day just because the allowance of calories I have is so much greater. So also lean into just another good reminder about the volume.
Give the example of like the volume comparison, like what you were eating before versus now.
Yeah, for sure. So I was eating like leaner ground beef, which even though it's lean, it's still higher in calories, but I was basically eating, you know, a pound at lunch with my carb source and some vegetables. And then we were basically splitting the second pound at dinner. And those would really be like my only main 2 meals with like the Nash bars and protein shake. And then we ended up switching. I was just noticing like I was not getting a lot of bang for my buck calorically. I was hungry, not very much so volume foods. We were eating like a pretty dense pasta for a little while, and I was noticing this, and so we decided to switch back. And I also am like very reactive to inflammation, and like my body, I've come to realize, and this is why it's so important, guys. Like this is such a good point to talk about, like how everyone is truly different. Like there's guys I follow and look up to in the fitness space who, like for example, can eat red meat every single day, and they will be absolutely, you know, completely shredded, no inflammation, nothing. If I eat red meat, like I blow up like a balloon, especially like my face, like just inflames like crazy. So I've always noticed that I'm like very, very reactive to inflammatory foods. And so that was another reason why I wanted to kind of cut back, because it was just a high volume of red meat every day over, you know, the last like week or so. or a couple of weeks. And so, you know, we decided to make this switch and literally just switching to chicken for lunch and then doing salmon at dinner. I'm able to eat like almost a pound of each, like literally almost a pound of each. So more protein, and I'm able to eat oats on top of like my lunch, my dinner, and my Nash bars and protein shakes. So I'm able to eat, you know, oats on top of that just by swapping my protein source. So that's like a perfect example of like same amount of calories, way more food. And that's what's crazy. Like the better you guys get at manipulating and playing around with like, you know, the total amount of the foods that you're filling those total amount of calories with, you can really get creative. And especially when you are, you know, leaning into those volume foods. Mm-hmm. And so on to our next question, which is, what is your favorite day to train and why? And this is upper, lower, full, et cetera, was the second part of the question. So what is your favorite day to train and why? Upper, lower, full, et cetera. So for me, this is tough. I've actually like really weirdly grown to love training my lower body. I used to have like my whole life, like even as an athlete, like when you're training as an athlete, you know, you're getting like a standardized program that like all the other athletes are getting. So like, you know, you have some guys who like, you know, they'll adapt so fast to like any sort of lower body training, like their legs will adapt and they'll get bigger. For me, like I just always kind of struggled with like size in my lower body and my legs. And when I became a trainer and like really started to understand like how to tangibly, like legitimately build muscle tissue, it just like really became fun and like a fun challenge where like I've been able to grow muscles in my legs that I never had before. So I really do love lower, but if I had to, yeah, I mean, if I had to, this is really hard. If I had to like put a day on it, I really like upper body and specifically like shoulders and arms. It's like my favorite day of the week. Like it always fires me up like every time I have that day. And I feel like I just like go so hard, for some reason on those muscle groups. I've always just been kind of like, I've always had like strong chest, strong back. And then lower body is like, honestly, total lower body. Like, I just love training legs, to be honest, in a weird, in a very weird, sick way.
Yeah. But I feel like from knowing you, it's like funny. You could probably answer these questions for each other, but like whenever you have that shoulder and arms day, like you're so jazzed up to do your workout. And like afterwards you're like, oh, I had the best workout. And I already know you're going to say it was your shoulders and arms day. So I feel like that's your favorite.
For sure.
Just by a small percentage.
It is, yeah.
And that's typically my favorite too. Like I would say for the past, like honestly since the summer, I would say like the shoulder and like arms day, like the hypertrophy upper body day that you make for me is my favorite. And actually changed this week. I've like hated legs ever since I had my back injury. I just feel like I could not like go hard on leg day, and I would always like just like overdo it and then like hurt my back, not hurt it, but like it would flare up. So I have a bruised disc and it was like healed for a while. And then I weaved in like those lower body movements I wasn't able to do before. And I just realized like I have to train my body in a certain way and have to be okay with that versus letting my ego take over and saying like, I need to do RDLs because I know they really work well for your glutes, or I need to do sumo deadlifts. But like my body is just not it for me. And I have to realize that. And I think that's why I hated leg days for so long. Lately is like that I want to do these movements and I want to be back where I was like a year ago, but it's just not my reality and I have to be okay with that. And we were having a conversation over Snooze in Denver, which was amazing, by the way.
Fireplace.
And I was like getting emotional because I was just like, I hate that I can't train like I used to. Like being a personal trainer, it's like our body is like our business, and being injured, it like really sucks. And I can't post certain workouts because I can't do certain movements. And so I felt like restricted in what I can post or what I can do, and it just sucks. So Zach was like, let's just sit down and like completely like think about what movements you never feel bad afterwards, and like really just restructure, you know, your quad day and hamstring day. And I did my hamstring day when we were in Denver. I did my quad day today, and this was the first time on a leg day where I'm like, I love this. Like I felt so good. I felt like I could feel it in the right places. I feel like it didn't hurt my back afterwards, and I look forward to doing legs again. And I'm doing this program for like the next 8 weeks. So someone who's injured, like something to think about is like, you may have a little bit of like a basic workout, and that's okay. Like you're going to stick to the same movements for a long time, but it's going to be effective if you are having progressive overload and you're being intentional with your lifts and start thinking about the movements you can do versus the movements you can't do. And it completely shifts your mindset.
And there's zero exercises that you like have to do. Like there's not like, it's not like we have to do a certain exercise to yield a certain outcome. I like did a social media post on this last week where I talked about this, because as an athlete, and I see this in former athletes big time, but something that like people underestimate is like how beat up we get as like high level athletes. Like, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, and people are even shocked when I talk about it, but like we didn't have like the best lifting practices, even at a high level Division I program at like Ohio State. Like ego lifting, very prevalent, always pushing the weight, never really focusing on the details of form, range of motion, the things that really do matter, unfortunately. You know, so my body has gotten like really beat up and it has limitations. Like I have certain limitations, joint limitations that, you know, when I do certain exercises, like they literally do not agree with me. You know, I have like one ankle that's a little bit more mobile than the other one. I have a little bit better ankle flexion so I can squat better, but then my other one doesn't have as good of ankle flexion. And even though working through the mobility and doing the drill work and the functional range of motion work, like it is drastically improved, but I will always have my one side overcompensating when I do any sort of bilateral squatting. And so, you know, I've learned over time, especially coaching former athletes, guys who need a lot of modifications, and guys that need to train pain-free. Because quite literally at the end of the day, like no one wants to train with pain. Like when you're debilitated and you have pain, like Christina's describing, like it fucking sucks. And so like it's far more beneficial and you will have a much more enjoyable experience if you just silo and get focused in on like what are the specific movements and movement patterns that I can fucking crush it on. Like what are the ones that I know I can go hard as hell? Because we know if we're getting the right intensity, it's going to yield change and it's going to cause adaptations, especially in our muscles. And so a lot of times it's not about getting married to a movement or an exercise, but it's more so about focusing on the pattern. So what I mean by that is like there's a million different ways to squat. There's a million different ways to hinge. There's a million different ways to push, to pull, you know, adduction, abduction. Like, you know, all these different things are patterns. And if we just pick the variation of the pattern that makes most sense for us and our bodies and, you know, the state that we're in currently, you know, the more, honestly, the better the results we're going to have. One, and then, you know, two, you're also going to be training pain-free. So I just hope, you know, that resonates with somebody out there who might be feeling, you know, limited or feel like you have to do a certain exercise. Because at the end of the day, guys, there is no exercise we have to do.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for that reminder. I think this one's geared towards me specifically. When will you be pre and postnatal certified? And I'm taking a pre and postnatal cert right now. And I mapped out like something with like getting ongoing certification or ongoing education as a coach is like you're studying on top of your full-time job, and as entrepreneurs, like we're never done working. So for me, it's hard to find that time to fit in the modules. But like I'm a very, like even in school, I'm like, I wrote out my syllabus, my planner. I knew every single test. I knew every single quiz. I mapped out like what chapter per week I had to read. And I kind of treat this the exact same way. So I read, instead of doing my personal development Monday, Wednesday, Friday, when Zach's training in the gym, like we do our morning routines together, Tuesday, Thursday. But when we're doing it separate, I actually read my textbook, because I have to read a chapter per week, do a module, a quiz, and a test each week for the certification. So I mapped out like if I do Monday, Wednesday, Friday reading, I do a test on Sundays. Obviously this week I didn't take it, so I'm gonna have to do double this week. I mapped out that it will take me until the summer. So it will be probably like August, but as I'm going through it, each chapter, I'm learning so much and I don't want to like rush through it because I have forever to coach Built and Balanced Mamas. And I want to make sure I'm retaining the energy. I never want to rush through and just like skim over everything just to get the cert. I want to like absorb the information. I'm already incorporating the information I'm learning with my pregnant clients right now. And it's just a huge game changer. So by summer, I will officially have the certificate.
And that one's all Chris. That one.
You don't want to get pre and postnatal cert.
So next question is, how will you prep the week of your wedding nutrition-wise? And honestly, guys, I feel like, you know, I'm in a place right now that has honestly taken me a long time to get to, and I'm definitely going to be a little bit vulnerable with you guys on the podcast. But I feel like, you know, even not even super long ago, like something that's always been a struggle for me is like, you know, kind of turning it on, turning it off. You know, I feel like my days as an athlete like really messed with my kind of like hunger cues and just like my, just like the mental cues around nutrition, where like I can very easily, like if I need to eat 5,000 calories, like I can eat 5,000 calories. Like if I need to eat 2,000 calories, like I can eat 2,000 calories. So like I've always been able to like drastically increase, drastically decrease, and not like now, but like in the past, like when I was playing football and I was an athlete and we had to make certain weights and things like that. So I just know that like it's taken me a really long time to like heal that and gain an understanding of balance like around my nutrition. And I feel like when Christine and I have like traveled, or sometimes even on the weekend when like I let my habits like really, you know, go out the window, which again, it doesn't happen all the time, but there's just like sometimes here and there where like, just like you guys, you know, we're human and we'll fuck up. And, you know, I was kind of in that loop on a few different occasions, and it's taken me a long time to really heal that and gain a better understanding of my nutrition and how to, you know, have a couple drinks and be okay, and or how to, you know, have just, you know, a couple bites of this or a couple bites of that without having to like go absolutely balls to the wall. And so that all or nothing mindset, it's one of the hardest things to drop. And it's one of the hardest things I've had to work through as a former athlete. And, you know, it's kind of funny coming off of this Denver trip and like the last couple of trips we've done. And honestly, just the last, you know, really this past year over the weekends and things like that, I just feel like I've really gained a whole kind of new sense of control over my nutrition and balance over my nutrition. And I just know for a fact, like, you know, we've really worked hard at doing this, of adopting habits and especially the habits around our nutrition that quite honestly, guys, are life habits. You know, a lot of us, especially early on in our fitness journey, it's very easy to get caught up like in the destination and in doing things to reach that end destination and then kind of falling back on old habits and then going through that whole process again and always starting and always stopping and always starting and always stopping. And you get to a point where, you know, it really tires you out. And, you know, you kind of really have to work to find that balance. So I can quite literally confidently say, you know, the answer to this question is like, it's not going to look a whole lot different, you know, than what we're doing right now. And it's taken us guys years to get to that point, years and years and years to get to the point of finding that level of balance. Now, obviously, in like on a very specific, taking a more specific angle on this, like, you know, we might, depending on where we're at, like in our, you know, manipulating our calories, like those things might change, but quite literally a lot of our nutrition habits, like, aren't going to change.
Yeah, I would say, like, specifically the week of our wedding, I would be avoiding, and we typically avoid inflammatory foods. And if you're confused on, like, inflammation and inflammatory foods as a whole, we have an episode on it. But personally, I won't be, like, eating inflammatory foods the week before our wedding. And even, like, the rehearsal, I'm kind of, like, already thinking this far in advance, like, do I want to drink? Because, like, the one trigger I have for my face is alcohol, and I just get super puffy. And even this weekend, like, we drank two nights, and it was, like, a moderate amount. Like, we don't drink like we used to, and it shows in my face for probably, like, 4 days. So that's something I'll have to work on. But, like, our water intake will be on point. Our calorie intake will be consistent with what we're at. But typically what I do and what I'm going to do with myself, I actually mapped out for the next year. Like, maybe we could do an episode on, like, a wedding prep, but I mapped out, like, what phases I'm going to be in throughout the entire year, like, based on my bachelorette, based on the wedding, and doing it in a sustainable way. And typically what I do for my brides is I put them through a reverse first, then we cut, and then in the last month ahead of the wedding, because it's, like, a lot of stress, the month of a wedding, and your body in a stress state, in a calorie deficit, can cause you to, like, be inflamed, or just your cortisol levels be super high, which doesn't, you know, do a whole lot for our body composition. So what I typically do is I'll start reverse dieting clients the month of their wedding. So when they go into the big day, they're not in a deep deficit. Because going into your wedding, like, if you have a coach who, like, puts you in an extreme cut, then you go into your wedding day in a cut and you're not going to be tracking it. I don't have my clients track on their wedding day or even their honeymoon. So, like, just to give a little success story, one of my clients who just got married like a month ago, we did a reverse diet, then we did a cut. Then we started reversing before her wedding, then probably like 3 weeks before. And then over her wedding and honeymoon, she didn't track anything, came back, stayed at the same calories for a week, was the exact same weight as before her wedding. She was able to be present, enjoy herself. She was like, I never received so many compliments on how amazing I looked, how happy I looked. She wasn't low energy because she was reverse dieting. She was almost at maintenance calories. She was able to enjoy herself, be present, and not worry about calories. So, like, going into your big day in a reverse is, like, one of the best things. That's what I'm gonna do for myself. I'm gonna start reversing a month before our wedding or a little bit before, so I'm not in a deficit going into our big day. I wanna, like, reach my body composition goal. I line it up with my tailoring appointments, and that's what I do for my clients too. So I start reversing to maintain that last appointment, like, measurement. And then you go into your big day, not a deficit. So that's what I'll be doing. I won't be eating in too big of a deficit. Be cutting out inflammatory foods just for picture's sake and, you know, my face and everything. So that's what it will look like the week of our wedding. Our favorite active rest day workouts or activities. Personally, I love Zach's cardio and core days that he makes for me, which are the best. I like when we get to do them together. It's typically on Wednesday for us, but sometimes on Wednesdays I'll just, like, run, and then that's one of my favorite active rest days too. It just, like, feels good to run, especially outside. And that's something we'll do in the summer months too. As it gets nicer, we have, like, a river path by us where we'll just, like, run for a couple miles, and doing it together is fun. But I also love, like, a cardio and core day, which is, like, just a circuit of, like, a cardio piece, a core piece, some body weight exercises, and repeating it for like 45 minutes feels really good.
Yeah, because it's like a very low intensity, like just your body weight, obviously some volume, but, you know, when you're used to training with those heavier loads and resistance, like, you know, training just your body weight for a longer format like that is obviously, you know, going to not only, you know, burn calories and whatnot, but it's also going to promote recovery. And that's honestly why I've really grown to love running, honestly, for active rest. Like, running is like so underrated, honestly, in my opinion, because like you're accumulating a ton of like total body activity. So you're burning a ton of excess energy, you know, through exerting your entire body when running. And if you keep the intensity low, like if you're doing like a lower intensity like jog or lower intensity run where you're keeping your heart rate, you know, kind of like below that max heart rate range, it actually is helping you promote recovery and accumulate steps and accumulate activity and burn calories. Versus like if you're doing like all out high intensity sprinting, that can actually disrupt, you know, your central nervous system's ability to recover, the muscle's ability to recover. So honestly, like that's why we've incorporated a lot of like kind of like running, jogging interval style activity. But mostly I like to do, you know, kind of like that running, walking on my active rest days. Cause like I said, not only is it helping me keep my steps high, my activity high and burn, you know, energy, but on top of that, it's also promoting recovery.
And we appreciate you guys asking so many questions. We have tons more like fitness, nutrition, personal related questions to get through. So we wanted to make this a two-part series. We'll do like an April Q&A, and we have a fun interview coming up next week as well. So this will be divided up into two parts. You guys will get the second half probably mid to end of April because we don't want to rush through these. We love like elaborating on them and just going deep with these questions that you guys ask. We want to make sure we get to every single one. So we will be doing a part two. It will just be a couple weeks till we get that out to you guys. But next week we have an interview and we've got everything like Nash related, coaching related down in the show notes. If you guys want to share this episode on your story, you have no idea how much it means to us. We obviously do this because we love doing podcasts for you guys and we love creating this community with Life Rewired, but the reviews and just like you guys sharing it, like even with one person in your life, like means the absolute world to us to grow the Life Rewired community. So please share it on your story, tag us, tag Life Rewired. All the links are in the show notes and we will see you guys next week.
Peace out.